Everybody, Brian Hoagley, welcome back to CISO Life. Joined with me on a fabulous Tuesday. It is Tuesday, right? Yes, it is. It's Tuesday before RSA, actually.
Oh, stop it.
Dimitri joins us
here. I see you're not going.
I'm not going again, so if you follow me on LinkedIn, you'll see that I have the not at RSA again this year. What am I going on, 12 years running? Something like that?
I think I'm, you know what, I need. Can you send it to me? I want to borrow that, because I haven't been, and I'm not sure I will ever go.
I actually purpose built that overlay for Esmond Kane at Steward Health last year. Hi, Esmond. Yeah, so I mean, look, it's not a bad conference. It's I think, you know, it's just not for everybody. It's like, you know, it's like anything. You know, it's not everybody's into everything. I think it was really useful a couple of years ago. I think, you know, the feedback I get now is it's a great time to go reconnect with friends. Which, you know, I don't necessarily want to go and go to a cybersecurity conference to do that. I'd rather invite people over to my house and drink a beer and hang out to reconnect with friends. But hey, you know, teach their own. So, Dimitri, what's your thoughts on, like, have you heard anything about what's going on at RSA this year or
most
otherwise?
Most of the things I've heard were I'm reconnecting with old friends. I've seen some of the emails. We have the best food and the best activities. That's how they're pitching it right now. That's how vendors are pitching for you to come. So it's pure. It's purely, you know, the visuals of
best
it.
Best food and activities. I mean, I could probably find that at a really nice hotel somewhere down in Key West, Florida.
And I bet you at like quarter of the price that it is right now at RSA. I mean, for you to get to RSA and have any kind of experience, we're talking thousands of dollars for economy seats and like no luggage, and then more thousands for like a 3-star hotel an hour away. No? Yes?
Yeah,
about?
Something like that.
So if this was all that, and then you go to a conference where your mind is blown with unbelievable technology, but majority of people that are going there are going there to meet other people. They're not even going like, oh, I already know all this technology. So
it's not consumer electronics. Right?
No,
it's not like, you know, it's built for like, you know, B2C. This is cybersecurity is predominantly a business to business type of
and commodity, you know, commoditized more and more these days. So you're going like we went to an auto show yesterday, day before yesterday. Beautiful cars, right? You get to sit in the thing. What are you gonna do there? Like another 14 of vulnerability management vendors or you know,
who knows?
So I have a hard time justifying it to anyone. Now, if you're in San Francisco or if you're a vendor, that's a whole different story.
Sure.
Then, and I mean, you're a vendor, so maybe you need to go because of that.
I am a vendor. So I've, you know, like any cybersecurity conference, and not just RSA, other conferences, you know, you're constantly weighing, you know, what's going to be the ROI on this. We just did a phenomenal one, right? Secure World, right? I actually really like Secure World because it's local to Boston, right? They have, Brad does a great one in Boston. Hi, Brad. And it's a great one. I mean, we've sponsored it before. We've had a booth there. There's a, you know, there's an interesting ROI that you got to calculate. You know, how many people do you send, right, to man the booth so you can be effective versus how many leads are you going to get out of that and the type of quality conversations you get coming back. There is an ROI, I think, for very well-established players. I think it's difficult for startups or smaller companies trying to break in. But, you know, sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes somebody's looking for the thing that you just figured out how to start doing, and that's part of your startup, and there's interesting. I do believe there's a good ROI for potential partnerships being built between vendors. That I definitely felt was significant. But, you know.
So maybe that's the thing now. Maybe instead of it being a customer-focused or sales-oriented, maybe it should be more of a trade show.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, customers come if you want, and obviously there'll be value for you here, but our priority is in advancing the industry.
Right.
And that's not enough of that is happening. So events like what you said, like Secure, I love Secure World, is primarily because of its constant, like controlling the size. It's not huge, but it's not small. It's just the right size for both of those things to happen.
Because they do, I think it's because they do it regionally, so you're able to kind of spread out. You're not thinking, okay, RSA happens once a year. It's in one location, everybody descends on it versus maybe regional conferences.
Yeah.
Again, there's regional conferences aren't always the best either, right? There's pluses and minuses to that. You've got
careful.
Well, I'm just saying you've really only got, so here in the Northeast, right? You're only going to get exposed to probably the Northeast sales teams.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to necessarily get people coming in. Maybe you don't even have the senior leadership from bigger companies, right, who are going to go to a more regional conference to represent the product. You're going to have your regional teams. Your, you know, maybe you're just big enough to do East, West, U.S.
Yep.
Maybe you do have regions. Who knows? But, you know, the CEO of any of the major cybersecurity vendors will probably be at RSA around the booth, be able to have conversations with high prospect clients or potential clients, right? They're not necessarily going to go to all the regional type of conferences at a smaller set. So again, there's a plus and minus, right?
I guess. I just, as a CISO, maybe if I ever switch to the vendor side and I start doing something again, maybe. But even then, it's like RSA is now the, it's like you go to Disney because you're going to Disney.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because you're going to Florida or not because you're going to have, well, anyway, fun with the kids, but Disney first, then fun with the kids.
Right.
This is what I think RSA has turned to be. You're going to RSA, and then it's all about maybe cybersecurity or vendor relationships or whatever it is. It's almost becoming secondary now.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it is. We'll obviously get all the reports back. Please do take pictures of your bingo cards if you are creating or tracking any of that. I did see Alan Alford picked up a really cool one online. And
what do you get?
No, he's just got a really neat bingo card that he found and he shared with some folks.
You see what we're getting down to? Who's getting a better bingo card? Vendors, by the way, out there. Cool bingo cards and amazing stickers. I saw some really, really nice stickers recently.
Hey, there's some great swag everywhere. I joked with somebody online after I posted my little not out of RSA overlay about, you know, do you think that maybe you could, if you went, you could maybe pick me up a pen, a squishy, a tote bag, a hat, a notebook, a three-pronged cable charger for a phone, a koozie, and maybe, well, we, I
guess sanitizer.
I was going to say mouse pad, but we don't mouse pads anymore. So if anybody could pick me up one of those, if you think maybe they'll have them, I'd love it.
That'd be really cool.
That would be good. Well, enough of that. I mean, would like to see some pictures. Comment down below if you have any cool photos from RSA years past. And do come back to this post either on LinkedIn or YouTube and show us your photos from this year. Take some selfies. Hang out with some friends.
Hashtag CISO life.
That's right. Hashtag CISO life. And if somebody could get, I don't know, if, like, I always love this. It's kind of interesting. Just like from a marketing standpoint, the art that goes into the CrowdStrike APT. I don't know if they're robots or if they're the just name. Like.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have that shot. I wonder.
The big guys that are set up with all the, it looks like armor. I don't know if they're
stopping
robots
breaches,
or not. Yeah, whatever that is. Somebody get a picture with them, please. That'd be great. I'd love to.
And tag Brian.
Yeah, and tag me. I just want to, you know, if you can get into the picture with them so I understand how big they are for scale, that'd be good. All right, enough of that. And speaking of vendors, a couple interesting things happened in the news. One, obviously not a security vendor, but has security implications. The other one being a security vendor. Which one do you want to hit on first? Security vendor or non-security vendor?
I think let's start with non-security because the underlying foundation of that will explain then why the security vendor is important.
Sure. So TikTok's in the news again. And what do we have to deal with? Well, let's see. The U.S. lawmakers have decided that they're going to force in some way TikTok to either sell or be sold off from ByteDance.
Divest, right?
Divest. Shut down operations in the U.S. entirely. I believe ByteDance even responded saying that they would rather pull out of the U.S. market than divest of TikTok, which, bold move, you know? We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, there's a formula. I think they have a proprietary algorithm and formula that they can't transfer, right? You can't split it. But again, I think all those things are public statements for now. I think they got, 270 days and then 9 months, something like that, to get that organized?
That sounds government-y.
Government-y,
270 days is generally like a good grace period from the U.S. government.
A good grace period. So there'll be conversation. I mean, I'm already watching commercials. TikTok, you know, like, hey, my whole livelihood is on TikTok.
Oh, I saw a billboard driving down towards Worcester, Massachusetts from where I live, right? And, you know, well outside of Boston, hour outside of Boston. Billboard on the side of the yard saying that TikTok is responsible for X amount of billions of dollars of revenue and jobs and whatever in the area.
Yep.
I was like, wow, they just went right away. They were like getting out there.
And what Brian just did by repeating that slogan is exactly what the problem is. Mere presence of that tool of TikTok in our environment is a concern. We have to sort of understand what TikTok is. We are talking social platform, you know, sharing of short videos and things like that. But that's what it does for you. But what does it do for its owners?
Right.
And more importantly, what do the owners have to do based on the laws of where they are?
Right.
And they are in
China.
China.
So not a lot of laws probably protecting U.S. interests in China.
I would say even more importantly, they actually have laws specifically mandating that they share information with the government. So do we really want a government of a
foreign adversary?
To put it mildly, that is in, quote, low-intensity conflict with the United States already, end quote. Do we really want them to have that kind of ability to gather information? More importantly, I think, that gathering information is their ability to influence public opinion.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is much, much, much bigger problem. And in my mind, if we can disarm TikTok, split him, right, have him be running here, by all means.
Sure.
What I'm really concerned about is their ability to influence public opinion with how they manipulate data flow, how they concentrate certain topics with certain people, certain groups of people, teenagers, young adults, you know, you name it. And we really need to get down to the reality that we are in a world war that is sort of spread around the world right now. And a lot of it isn't kinetic. It's not shooting and dropping bombs. It is this exact
psychological
thing.
Warfare.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're, so I've weirdly given a lot of talks over the last 2 years on TikTok and the concern of the app itself, which I'll post down below a couple different talks I gave both for The National in Canada and for NBC. And actually on Maria Bartiromo's morning show 2 years ago.
Look at you getting on.
Yeah. I just happened to be in New York at the time. Just the app itself, like what it can do. What can the app do if it's just on your phone, right? It can basically see kind of, you know, side to side, right? What can it see? Bluetooth connections that you're on, Wi-Fi that you're on. Maybe it can't read the data, right? But it can look at all the metadata about you. Where are you going? Who are you near? What else you, what other apps are you using? What other apps do you not use a lot? You can determine a lot of information based on ancillary, you know, information to somebody. That's a concern, right? Who's controlling and managing that? Who's programming that? Who controls the CI/CD pipeline for the TikTok app and what they can do? Then there's the data aspect, right? Who has the data? What can they use the data for? Can they use it to influence, you know, hey, I believe that, you know, this group of voters in this part of the United States is kind of on the fence, or they've been swing states previously, or we've seen data that, you know, they just need to get pushed over this way and it could change an election, right? Whether it's locally, at a state level, or at a federal level. I mean, data scientists do this for legitimate reasons on behalf of the DNC and the RNC. You insert a foreign adversary into it, says, hey, I want it to go that way. They've got now access to that information, and they've got a front row position to the user on their phone to be able to just go and say, hey, I'm going to show you this because I know what you're looking at. I know your interests.
Yep.
And let me just start peppering you with some more information to maybe get you to start thinking this way, right?
How many billion of dollars we just sent to Taiwan as foreign aid? I mean, that's like right there, that's on the table. That's some very scary stuff. I was born in USSR, born, you know, a place where this was a government level system methodology to maintain and manage your population. They just didn't have the tools like TikTok back there. And now we have it, and we are letting them operate in our environment. Right. I think tactically, operationally, and strategically, that is a big mistake. And it seems to me that our lawmakers are thinking the same.
They are finally thinking the same. I said, I think a year or two ago, that it's going to be very hard to kind of put this genie back in the bottle. Like, the app is out, right? And I believed, and I said, the only way that they could ever get around actually removing it out of the U.S. populace would be forcing the app stores, Apple and Google, to force remove that app from its stores and somehow pull back somehow from phones. I mean, just think about this. When the iPhone came out, Apple pushed U2's album to everybody's iPhone, right? But it's a great example of the fact that they have the power to do it, right? Now do we either ask them or force them to wield that power as a good.
And it's tough because it's very, I mean, that billboard you're talking about and all those and revenue, that's not necessarily not true. That is the impact, but we have other options. And I think politicians are often missing the point of bringing reality to its population. And I think if they were realistic about what the problems are and describing that, I think we have that. I think it could be we could convince our population this is not a terrible move. We're not restricting freedoms. This isn't about freedom, democracy, or even economics. This is purely about protecting
ourselves.
Yeah, this is us. It's not just American, Western in general.
Right, Western society and ideals. And it's, yeah, we're not removing an app that just shows funny cat videos, right? This has a deeper, more profound impact on the way we look at things. And let's be honest, most social media does too, right? I think the big difference is that the other social media platforms that have a really, you know, lion's share of the market are U.S.-based. And they're going to hold to U.S. laws. They're not going to upset the country that they're in, right? And I think they're going to be playing nice.
They only want to make money. They don't want to kill you.
Yeah. Right. We do have. I mean, but you know, it's not funny, but people don't think about this. They just think it's funny cat videos. Like, why would you take that away from me? You know, it's
on us
like
to bring the back. It's a ministry of no again. This is our problem.
I know. It is terrible.
Speaking of, isn't that, there's another, this is what we're talking about, right? This is the cybersecurity one that you...
So the other guys, right? They just happen to be Russian in their structure. And Kaspersky is back in the news again.
And the founder just happens to be a KGB or an ex, though you're never an ex.
I was going to say, no one's ever
an ex-KGB officer, right? So founder is a KGB officer. And they are laws similar to Chinese laws about participation and control of the of development and so on. Again, I mean, in this case, Russia is literally in conflict, armed conflict.
Right.
Shot down a Reaper about a year ago over Black Sea. I mean, we're talking literal warfare.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to let them operate again in this environment. And now these guys are root access, right? It's an antivirus.
Oh, yeah.
You're literally going to give him root access and visibility to your environment. Now, back in the day, I used to love Kaspersky. It wasn't a bad tool. If you just think about it, it probably isn't a bad tool right now. But is this the risk we can take within the context of global conflict that is happening? And again, I don't know if we can do that.
Well, the U.S. government has, because we've put two software products onto GSA, which is how the U.S. government and federal and state can purchase software. And GSA has components that stipulate, you know, these are the companies that are not allowed on GSA, cannot be sold through GSA. And they ask you, are they part of your supply chain? Do you have any involvement with them? Yeah. Are you reselling their product? But the U.S. federal government came out and basically banned Kaspersky products in its entirety.
Maybe they know something.
I'm pretty sure they do. You know, so they made that statement and they kind of put their foot down on that. You know, they did it with, I always say it wrong,
Huawei.
Is it Huawei?
Huawei.
You don't pronounce the H?
Okay. I don't think so. The phones, the Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese manufacturer, right? It's like HUA.
Yeah.
So they did, I mean, they did it with that. So the question now is that going down to a state level? Is that going kind of across kind of U.S. commercial is
business,
to really push
right?
in business? Hey, you know, you can't, you as a business can't do work with the U.S. government or state governments if you're using Kaspersky products.
Yeah.
So they're finally figuring out from what can compliance actually do? What can we actually mandate? And let's not just ban the products. Now let's put pressure on the companies to not even buy the products, right? So you got to go where the revenue line is. If you impact a revenue line, you can actually make things happen with cybersecurity pretty well.
Yeah, very quickly. It works really well. It's shockingly, when we just think about the money and the bottom line, it all works.
Yeah, it does.
Until there's World War III, four, whatever
four,
you want to call it.
Right. Yeah. Well, Dmitry, another riveting discussion. You know, I'm going to not be able to sleep at night thinking about this again.
I got good drug sleep. I'm sorry, I didn't say that.
I'm a former CISO. I know how to sleep at night.
Exactly.
Or at least I know how to deal with not being able to sleep at night. Any parting words?
Make sure there's no TikTok. But I mean, seriously, talk to your kids. Because this is now at the level where we need to start communicating in a way very similar to what we used to do back when, you know, phishing and things like that social media was just starting up. And we're telling our kids, be careful, you know, don't put things on there. We need to start talking about things like TikTok, like Kaspersky. We need to start thinking and talking about global implications. 1935, 37 is whatever to not where we are now compared to, let's say, pre-World War II. We're not that far from like open conflict where U.S. troops will be involved. And these things will have an impact down the line. So, you know,
definitely will
sleep well at night.
It's not just, you know, I think back to like teaching my kid about what not to put online.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we've kind of crossed that barrier. Now it's about watching where you get your information from. Where are you getting your information from online? Are those authority, are those authoritative sources? Can you trust those sources?
And even if you can, double, triple. Try and get several sources. We're down to like misinformation management. Like, this is ridiculous.
Crazy. Well, thanks again, everybody, for joining us here in the studio.
Not at RSA.
Not at RSA. We are somewhere in Shrewsbury in the CISO Life studio. Thanks again for joining us. Do click down below, grab the hit the subscribe link and the bell, getting notifications for future. You'll see us around on LinkedIn. You can follow us using CISO Life and anywhere else on social medias. Be good, be safe, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks.